Lord, we thank you for today, and especially thank you for this beautiful day you've made, and we thank you for this weekend too, for all the blokes that are here. And we just lift Daryl up to you now, Lord, and may you speak through him the words from your Holy Spirit and things that he's going to share and encourage us with, and just ask you to bless him and bless each one of the blokes at this session as well, Lord. We just ask this in your name.
Amen. Yeah, thanks, James. That's great. If someone else comes out, we can just jump in as well.
Or we can lock the door, whatever you want.
No, this would be good. And look, I love the outlook that, you know, there's a lounge, it's pretty relaxed, and we're up close and personal. So that's good, because I'm hoping that... come in, dear.
There we go.
Sorry, I'm sorry. Haven't missed anything. Hans has just prayed over me, mate. So that was important. But the session was just about to kick off. So just as I was saying, it's maybe a little bit primitive when you look at PJ, but I knew that the room that I was in didn't lend itself to any screens or computers or anything like that. So I just went back to the old days, whiteboard, a few things on there. I knew we were going to be in close, we can see it, so that's great. As I was just saying, it's good, we're nice and relaxed. I'm looking at, the thing that I'm looking for really is input from you guys as we go along, and probably got four or five questions. We were going to sort of, a little bit like shed or whatever, but there'll be times when you might be able to reflect upon yourself and then speak up and share and that sort of thing. So that's where we're going to get the benefit from it. It's no good, you know, as you've seen with PJ and that, you know, where you get the stuff that comes from the floor, that's the best bits. I mean, it's good to get the stuff on the screen and you get the intellectual approach and the words and the numbers and all that sort of stuff. But the real stuff comes when both from the floor can kick in and share. So anyway, so at first, and that was interesting where Dale asked me to step up, because what had happened was they'd put it up, or they more or less decided that Esau selling your birthright, which is a part of this, was the main thing, and they've seen the notes that each of you will get to take away with you, and I think that they were just seemed to be a little bit concerned that they might have, as he said, undersold it, not really got the name right or whatever. But this is our session is managing your appetite, and we're linking back with what's it got to do with like a bowl of stew and the story, the biblical story in Genesis of Jacob and Esau.
Sorry about that.
No, jump in. Just wherever you feel comfortable. So that's the nuts and bolts of it, and this is something that really affects us every day, and all of us is about our appetites. So we're going to talk about that. Now, I'm probably not in the same class as PJ or whatever, so I've got some notes, and I'm going to read from some of them. We're going to go through the Bible story, and we're just going to, with our sheets up the front here, and into discussion, we're just going to get through this. Okay, so the first thing that I'm just going to talk about is that we don't think about this much, but you've really got no idea what God has planned for you in the future, how he's going to use you, or how he's going to use your children, or ultimately your grandchildren. You just got no idea what the future's going to hold. And I know, I'll just share just a little bit about myself, that I've been a Christian about 6, maybe 7 years. Before that, I don't really know what I was, maybe a believer or whatever, but I certainly wasn't a Christian. Led a totally different life than I do now. I'm heavily involved into sheds. I run the shed, not in Deniliquin. We're in our 5th year now. Men's ministry is on my heart. Dealing with men, that's my passion. Came to Better Blokes last year. I've been to Big Shed. This year, I put my hand up to do an elective. Great. They said, yeah. But what I'm getting at is, 10 years ago, if you'd have told me that I'm going to be here today talking to you, Blakes, that was as far removed from my life as possible. Now, I know it's like some of you have maybe been Christian since birth, been brought up, and that's just just a natural progression that you do things and ultimately God stuff happens. But for where I was, this is just so not in my future. So I guess why I'm saying that is that what's in your future? You know, how are you or what you do going to affect your kids so that what's in their future and ultimately your grandkids? So stuff's going to happen. And we just don't want anything to interfere with what God's plan might be for you. So what I'm going to talk about today is just a slice of life that not many people really think about. But it's a pretty powerful powerful slice of life that can determine the direction and the quality of your life. It's got the potential to overpower your prayers and your worship and your commitment to Christ. And we've heard some stories over the last couple of days about people standing up and talking about where it's all gone wrong. It's one thing that shipwrecks more individuals than anything else in the world. You will either rule it or it will rule you. And that's your appetite. You will either rule it or it will rule you. Now, your appetite, let's move on to the next one here. There are different appetites. At first we just think about our appetite for food. And as we've been hearing, sex. Men's appetite, what do we need? Well, we don't need sex, but what have we got? Food, sex, but there's more. And I just want to just run through some of these appetites that you can see. Is we have built into us a lot of these appetites. Okay? So we're not just talking about addictions and all those sort of things, but we've got appetites for progress, respect, love. You know, we all want to be loved. You know, if we're not loved, we just shy away. Some people want to be fame, have be famous, have people know who they are when they walk down the street. Look at me. You know, and we see that in the movie stars, and just people do things to try and become famous. A lot of people just want responsibility. A lot of people want to win. Be first in everything. You see this a lot with kids. Win. It's all about me. I want to win. Acceptance. We all have an appetite for acceptance. We want to be recognised, and we want things. And then there are the other appetites that we have, which we probably think more about, is our addictions. That might be drugs, gambling, pornography, cigarettes, sexual, shoplifting, stealing, all of those sort of things. They're our appetites. Now, doesn't mean that they're all bad. It's just that sometimes we don't know how to manage them, and that they are ruling us and we're not ruling them. So, just just in line with those appetites, just make sure I didn't have all of them. What I want you to think about now, and we can talk about this, is that people's appetites, I want you to think about maybe your parents, yeah? And some of you have probably got great parents or what, that sort of thing, but not everybody has. Now think about your parents and think about what some of their appetites might have been. And where they are now is because of how they've managed their appetites. So I'll just kick that out to the floor now. Just think about your parents. Look at them. Now if everything's been great in their life and all's good, then they probably had a pretty good control of their appetite. Okay? But if it's not, then let's just talk about parents. Anybody, jump in.
I don't know where my dad or stepdad is at, but third marriage in Canberra. And when I was a kid, he was always working or drinking.
Okay.
Yeah, and that didn't lead to a good family life.
Okay, so what are we saying there, really, in what we've been talking about so far?
His appetite controlled him.
Yeah, so he didn't really have a handle on his appetite.
No.
Okay, and his appetites were, as you just said, drinking and gambling.
Hard work.
Working
yeah.
hard, okay. So that's... It controlled him.
Yeah, and I don't know why, but he always moves around every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, right.
Still does. So.
Okay. Thanks, Ian.
I can relate with that. My father, an alcoholic. It just ate him up, I guess. The alcohol was his
appetite.
His appetite, yeah.
So what we're seeing here, what were the consequences of that?
Destroyed family.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, his inner self destroyed, you know, he's just not even himself.
Okay, so he didn't manage his appetite, no. But the consequences then are not just relating to him.
No, that's right.
They relate to you. Yeah. So there's pain carried through in your life because someone else didn't manage their appetite very well.
That's right.
Their appetite ruled them. Talk to me. Tell me about your parents, Michael. They got it all together.
And I guess I consider as far as the parents thing that I'm very blessed. I've got been brought up a Christian from a young age, and as long as I can remember, we've been to church every week, and they're still married. They've been farmers that have had their challenges, that they've had to work hard at times when there was an opportunity for them to move and expand. They did, but then suffered some really tough times for a while, but still maintained their faith and stayed together, and they've set a wonderful example for me, I guess.
Okay. The other extreme where they've been able to manage their appetite for whatever things might have popped up, and the consequences of that are that you have come out fine. Can we just say that broadly? Fine.
Yep.
And your kids. So it gets down to, you know, what have they been able to do in their lives that Jason's dad has not been able to manage, and Ian's dad's struggling with as well.
Well, I can see already what went wrong with my family. My parents got married in Poland, and when my dad was a German soldier, he was an Austrian, but he was a German soldier at the time, and he was taken prisoner to Russia for 4 years, and when he came back from there, he didn't look for us. We had moved to West Germany at the time. I was only 3 months old when we moved, and my mother kept looking for him, and she found him 6 years later. He, in the meantime, had remarried because he thought we were dead, and that is his appetite. You know, like he got remarried, my mother sort of set procedures in place, so he came back to us, and I didn't like him. Like I was sitting there in the corner, and he was sitting here. You know, he couldn't handle the fact that he had a nearly 6 year old son, or 6 year old son. But from that point, he got my mother pregnant. And then the second wife came and searched him out, and he packed up his things and left. So sort of divorce procedures were in place, and he left with absolutely everything that would help us to remember him.
Yeah.
The second child from that marriage doesn't even know him. You know, like. I was feeling very sorry for my brother later on in life. He had no recollection of a father. But my mother got remarried twice, and subsequently the third husband became my brother's father. He called him dad, and I didn't, because I was already 14 at the time, when they got married. And that is the consequence. My mother was a Lutheran and sent me to Sunday school, and I very quickly picked out from Sunday school that you have to make a decision. And my decision was, at the time, when I get married, I will not get divorced. And that is what my wife appreciated in me when she met me, because we talked about these things. That's my principle, and she identified with that, and we were still together after 42 years. Yeah,
that's good. Yeah. And as you say, there's consequences to that. Does any of these things on here, like we all have an appetite? Don't worry about that.
Some huger than others,
but some different. As we go around the room, is there something there that might be jumping out at? At each of you,
we'll just go around the room.
I'll kick off. I like being in front of the crowd. Give me a microphone, I'm happy. I like to walk in down there and people know who I am. I look after the website and I like it when people jump on there. Okay, now so that's an appetite that I have. Okay, now that can go from okay to really to the other extreme. No, it slides off. Oh, well, maybe if we leave the book there. Yeah, that's why I put it down there. Because when I put them up there, it just slid off. Good man.
That's why the Bible has to be the basis for everything.
Right, so I'll just share a little bit there like that. That's about who I am. Now, if you manage that's okay. Now, if you don't, then you've got troubles. Mm. I don't, can't see your name.
My name's Daniel, sorry. That's okay. I'll get it. probably for me, I'd identify with that, recognition, taking responsibility, having a role to play and something to contribute. Something of value, I guess. Yeah, that you have to manage that because I'm a proud man, and if I don't, if I let pride take over, then that isn't honouring to God. Whatever I do,
good.
So, yeah.
Thanks, Daniel. Ian, we'll just move around quickly.
Recognition. Yeah, it's nice to be recognised when you do something. And acceptance sort of thing. And I suppose probably because of things that, something missing. So, but also I found one of my friends noticed when I was, and it took me a while to get over this, but I've been playing video games since I was 10, but I actually became addicted to them and didn't realise. It took a long time to get that. Basically set up the challenge, say, if you're not addicted to them, tell yourself you want to stop, mean it, and then stop.
All right, well, we're going to talk later on about how we deal with those sort of things. Joel, we'll just quickly go around.
I guess I'm beneficial in that after I got married, it gave me a social control to curb some of my addictions, because I think sometimes, like, let's say at a free weekend when the wife went away or something, you go, oh great, I've got free time, I can indulge in something that I don't really get to indulge in. And for me that might be playing video games or playing with my friends or drinking more than I normally would, because you don't have that social control or that balance of, oh, I'm with my wife, or I've got to spend time watching TV but now I need to spend time over here. So I think a few of my appetites, I don't have that. If I can see the tendency to binge. And that's why I sort of step back, because it seems in the past, or it leads down a dangerous path for me.
Thanks, Joel. Devin?
Yeah, I'm with you, Darryl. You might not think I'm a shy, retiring sort of a man, but no, I'm not. Deep down inside, I love being out there.
Yeah.
Where everybody can see me. And
good. Good. Hands?
Well, good.
I'd started having an addiction to food.
Yeah.
A real serious problem.
Okay.
Just love it. Just love eating anything, anytime.
Shouldn't make it so nice, should they?
No, that's the problem, yes.
We can identify with that. We can identify with having food as an appetite.
Yeah.
Some of these other little tricky ones that we don't really identify with as well.
And I think I need, and I have an appetite for responsibility at home, but I never step up to the plate. No, that's one that's stuck there.
Thanks, Hans. Michael?
I've definitely got an appetite for acceptance and also, until the time I met my wife, I had an appetite for love, but I'd have to say that certainly being married has
satiated that appetite.
Well, it's helped me with...
Well, yeah, I think you still have an appetite for love. You still want to be loved.
Yes.
That's not lust. That's just love. We all want to be loved. Yeah. I want my kids to come up and say, "Hey, Dad, I love you."
Yeah.
You know, well, that's what I want.
Yeah.
You know, and you do too. Yeah. Dina?
Well, it's sort of a bit tricky, actually, to connect things. But when I sort of look at myself, I've got sort of all sorts of addictions. Taking pictures is an addiction, you know, like a...
Oh, is it ever? I just wish you'd clear off the
Ah, did you see that? How you could have. That's
not that. Right.
It does take away some intimacy with my wife, you know, like but she's actually happy with this, but... one year she had to go to hospital for 3 days over the weekend, and I thought, oh, good. I'll go to the pub and see what that's like. Yeah. So I get there and I don't know anybody because I don't go there. So that was a disappointment, and I was cured of that.
Okay, thanks, yeah. John.
Last night, what my passion was, and I couldn't answer him straight away because I was trying to work out how to actually put it all into one. I got lots of pigeonholed things, and now I think I'm sort of somewhere in the responsibility respect thing, I think.
Yeah.
Because I worked out after a while that I think my passion is actually getting reactions out of people. Whether I'm playing music, whenever I was playing the church organ, I wanted to be able to build the congregation up and support them. Yeah. So that they'd worship better. When I'm messing around with kids, I like to turn the world in a little bit of an oblique fashion so that they see things in different... I want to see the world through their eyes. When I'm messing around with my kids now adults, I just like to come at them in odd directions and just get a reaction so that things aren't sort of continue to be entirely more normal. I think I operate in a strange sort of world somewhere. But, yeah, I think something along there. I like to get reactions from people.
Is that sort of a bit like being a control freak or something?
Oh, no. Oh, heck no. Oh, no, I don't want to control them.
No.
I definitely not, because I'd screw that up big time. But I can't control me. Josh?
I think shyness is my appetite. I tend to like being in the background, doing things in the background. I do like recognition at times, but I think most of my, or what I want to do is just be in the background, not be noticed. It's really hard sometimes, so.
Yeah, you're
noticed,
Josh.
Yeah, I know I'm noticed, but yeah.
Do you resent it when people draw you out from the background? Do you wish they just wouldn't do it?
No, I don't mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you shrink from responsibility because of that, or?
Sorry?
Do you shrink from responsibility?
I do. I do shrink from responsibility, I'm not confident. Confidence is a big issue.
Okay. Right, Joel?
I'm not even sure where to start with mine. I ate mine last night.
Yeah. I'll just quickly, you had, as you spoke last night, some sexual things where you you just treated women like dirt and you just wanted them for one thing. Maybe there's an appetite there, it's maybe occurred. I think you're unhappy with your father, so you're looking for love and it's just not there, maybe. I don't know. We'll you did share your story last night.
It's actually hard for me to actually identify where I am on that.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to talk more. Jason?
I had an appetite for all the below addictions.
Yep.
That appetite is gone, thanks to God. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And these days, my appetite is for love, for my children to give and to receive.
Acceptance?
And acceptance as an equal. I don't like to be above nor under. I like to be in line with everybody.
Yeah.
That's my appetite.
Yeah. Good. Bill?
It's a very interesting list and doesn't really add up. But I actually have an appetite, I was thinking about it, everyone, I actually have an appetite for doing.
Okay, that's not the end of the world,
yeah, no.
You know, like some people have got an appetite for, as you say, doing, and that can be work, that can be like people are just work addicts, they stay at work, they don't want to come home.
Yeah, well when I was working in that sense, yes, it happened a bit that way. Since then, well, because I wasn't sort of studying in the same way, I took off and first thing I did and learned a language, so I had to be doing something.
Yeah.
Then, of course, doing photography, it doesn't matter what it is, I'm happy to do it, whether it's study, whether it's building something, like woodwork and stuff and all of that. My wife says to me at times, you can't sit still.
Mm.
So learning new stuff.
Yeah.
I don't mind learning new stuff. I like to keep my brain going. That's another thing. I have an appetite to keep my brain functioning well.
Yeah.
I don't want to rust out.
That's a good thing.
We've touched on a lot of things there. And some of them are okay. Sounds okay when you tell your stories and that. Some of them are not really okay. And the line is that if you control it, as we started off, if you can manage your appetite, and as I said, we're going to talk about what goes on with that later on, but if you can manage it, okay. But a lot of times we can't manage our appetites. And I'm sure that I'll just put that list up there, but I'm positive that you blokes here and me have got other appetites
mm-hmm.
that you haven't told me about.
Daryl,
is it deliberate that some, I think, with a couple of exceptions, most of them sort of have a negative aspect to them?
What I'm asking is,
the biggest hole I'm seeing, where's the appetite for God? Like, God's not on your list there. Is that a deliberate because it ties in later in the study, or is that an oversight? Because I struggle with not having an appetite for God because I've got an appetite for all these other things.
Yeah.
Is that just something that just doesn't even pop up in your mind?
No, it's not there. We'll get to,
okay.
to the Bible a little bit later on. It's that's right. But the same thing, if God was on the list, there are... it's still the same. If you've got an appetite for God, there are some people who I know who don't manage their appetite for for God very well.
Okay.
And you might know them and they have people in that like that, but some people are really have got an appetite for God, but get out of my face, you know, because they just...
Well,
they just want to beat you down or, you know.
You can put something like serving, and serving is generally a good thing, but someone can have an appetite for serving where it burns them out.
That's right.
You know, to the point where they
God gave us all appetites, right? God gave us appetites. Sin deformed them, if I can say that. But God gave them to us, right? And a lot of the things that are there, and a lot of things, appetites, they're biblical. But it's the distortion of the appetites, and it's where your appetite manages you, where we have the problem. And that's really the basis of this session today, and the story of Jacob and Esau that we get today. And you came here yesterday with an appetite for certain things, certain secret things maybe, maybe not. But just in general, there are things probably that you do that are maybe in secret, or that you wouldn't, you justify them, or it's okay because nobody else knows. Okay, now I'm just generalising there. But the thing is that you'd think that we would come here and we can do these sessions, we can listen to PJ and whatever, we can do shed and all that sort of stuff, we can sing songs, do prayer, all that sort of stuff. But when you leave here on Monday, which is tomorrow, when we go home tomorrow, the appetite is still going to be there. So it overrides nearly everything in your life. But let's just quickly think of a few leaders or sportsmen or politicians or those sort of people that have fallen from where they were because of they've lost control of their appetite. Now, I could name a few straight off, but I just want to hear from you guys. Some names. Give me some names.
Tiger Woods?
Okay.
Dallas Gaining.
That's one of the extreme example, you know, like you wouldn't want to think that everyone else is like that. Like Tiger Woods.
No, that's right. No, but we're looking at an example there. Now, Tiger Woods, top of his game, life is good. Tom, what happened?
Well, basically, he was womanizing, was sleeping around with loads of women.
Do something like 210 or something.
Keeping score, yeah.
I don't know. There was a few though. Okay, so from here to here, and I mean I know he's fighting his way back a little bit now, but he did his appetite managed him. Mm-hmm. That's what we're getting on. And I mean you can go down the line. Got some footballers for me.
Todd Carney, but he's climbing the way back up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Favola.
Wayne Carey?
Yeah.
What about some of your Craig Thompson? Like Jimmy Swagger.
Yep. Mm-hmm. What about Craig Thompson? Now, I don't know whether that's how much truth there is in that or whatever.
That's just alleged. You've got to watch that.
Yeah, I know. So, but still, we've got a leader that's...
Yep. That's a guilty man.
Yep.
That guy, I don't know if it's... the person you mentioned just then, but the driver of that politician who's being sacked or whatever, can't think of his name.
What about Whitney Houston?
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's still a few unanswered questions there, but still, you know.
Who was that, John?
Whitney Houston.
Singer, yeah, she had an amazing voice and destroyed it.
That's right.
President Nixon.
Yeah, Watergate. What about just some of your mates, maybe? Just let's forget about the big names. What about some of your mates? And we've heard a few down there. Don't worry about names or whatever. Just this bloke, you know. Mm-hmm.
I've been in and out of prisons. All the huge list.
Yep.
Blokes. Yeah, but I guess they never climbed. To four, I guess it all started from their birth, you know, they were just born into the wrong family in the wrong neighbourhood.
Mm. And you yourself, Jason, we can use you as an example. You had an appetite for
the high life.
The high life?
Mm.
Yep.
I was selling drugs and I was making a lot of money. And
yep.
I paid the price in the end because I was probably destroying my lives with what I was doing.
Yep. And then the alcohol got you?
The alcohol got me, the drugs I was selling got me.
Yep.
So I destroyed myself with that appetite.
Yep.
Generally.
That's right, your appetite managed you.
Yep.
now, it's turning around because of God.
The Lord's got Jason,
yeah. Okay, I'm just going to read a little bit now of Jacob and Esau, and let's see how this sort of ties in together, and we'll just... how many people know the story of Jacob and Esau just straight off the top?
Oh, I know.
Okay, good. All right, well, I don't know what version you've got there, but I'll just go quickly through. This is the account of the family of Isaac, the son of Abraham. When Isaac was 40 years old, he married Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramaean from Paddan Aram, and the sister of Laban the Aramaean. Isaac pleaded with the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was unable to have children. The Lord answered Isaac's prayer, and Rebekah became pregnant with twins. But the two children struggled with each other in the womb. So she went to ask the Lord about it. "Why is this happening to me?" she asked. And the Lord told her, "The sons in your womb will become two nations. From the very beginning, the two nations will be rivals. One nation will be stronger than the other, and your older son will serve your younger son." And when the time came to give birth, Rebekah discovered that she did indeed have twins. The first one was very red at birth and covered with thick hair like a fur coat. So they named him Esau. Then the other twin was born with his hand grasping Esau's heel. So they named him Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when the twins were born. Jacob means like heel grabber, which is like a deceiver. Okay. All right, so... Okay. First thing that comes to mind here is okay. We've got a couple of brothers. Who's got brothers? Okay, what's the deal with brothers? Older brother, younger brother.
Bit of a
youngest.
Yeah, but older brother. What goes on? Older brother, king of the castle. Younger brother, piece of crap.
Yep. You keep kicking downstairs, 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 downstairs.
Yeah,
until you hit your sister and then you get kicked back.
Yeah.
Younger brothers are spoiled.
Younger brothers are spoiled?
Yeah.
No.
They're getting things their own.
That's not true. No, it's not
true.
You're a younger
brother. It was true in that, then.
Which way? The younger one, brother?
Yeah, the younger one.
Okay. Well, let's see if it was a little bit different back there. As the boys grew up, now listen to this, Esau became a skillful hunter. He was an outdoorsman, but Jacob had a quiet temperament, preferring to stay at home. Isaac loved Esau because he enjoyed eating the wild game Esau brought home, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Okay, what's going on here?
Oh, that's pretty simple.
Yeah?
Favouritism within the family.
Favouritism.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so somewhere along the line, Esau was the boy. If he was a skillful hunter, I'm assuming that his dad taught him, spent time with him, or whatever. He was the lad, the boy, the firstborn. Mm-hmm. Even though they were twins, firstborn, the secondborn. Mum, you look after him. You find something for him to do. Does that anyone relate to that? Any of that?
Yeah, though sometimes with children, one can have a leading one. I mean, Esau might have wanted to be the hunter type, whereas Jacob might not have wanted that at all.
Mm.
Well, hence Isaac was drawn to Esau because
that's right.
Well, sometimes he can't compete. You know, he might have tried hunting his brother, but it's that much better than him. There's no point trying just to get beaten all the time. Go and do something to get better at.
Yeah, well, that's right. So. In those days, though, we're going back to olden day times, things were a little bit different for the firstborn. So we'll just read on just a little bit more. One day, when Jacob was cooking some stew, that's good. So Jacob's loved by mum, but also cooking.
Yeah.
Okay, we know that's all right. I don't mind cooking. But anyway, but one day, when Jacob was out doing all the manly thing of hunting and all that sort of stuff. One day when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau arrived home from the wilderness, exhausted and hungry. Esau said to Jacob, I'm starved. Give me some of that red stew. All right, Jacob replied, but trade me your rights as the firstborn son. Mm. Okay, now, who can tell me what the rights of a firstborn son were in those days? Does anybody know that? Well, it's called the birthright?
It's always got a double portion.
Okay, so we've got a double portion.
Inheritance.
That's the double portion. So the eldest son gets the double portion of the whole estate.
Okay, so I think double portion as in you got two suits.
Oh, no. So we've got double portion. So ultimately the firstborn ultimately is going to have going to be the richest kid. Okay.
But there was another factor to it. I mean, he got the double portion also, so that later on, and often Dad died first, then he had enough land to provide for his mother as well.
Yeah, that's some different cultures. But anyway, that's fine. Okay, so the double portion we get,
and the blessing.
The third one is the blessing. There's a perceived blessing from God on the firstborn child. Mm-hmm. The second thing is that when the fathers died, they then become not only the ruler of the family, but the judge of the family. What they say goes. Any problems come to me, I'll make a decision.
Is he arbitrator?
Yeah, well, judge. I don't know whether he arbitrates, but he makes the rulings. So, well, I suppose arbitrator is the right word. So birthright. Sorry?
The head of the tribe. It's like the chief.
Well, head of the family, anyway. But that, because it's just to do with the family, the first son in the family, not the first son in the tribe. Okay, so what have we got? We've got a double portion. Think of your own lives. Double portion. You get to be the head of the family and make decisions when Dad's not there anymore. And the third is that you get the blessing from God. Okay. That, in those days, pretty important. Pretty valuable type of thing. Much treasure. Okay, what I just want you to think about now, in your life, think about your birthright, or think about that birthright. What could you call as your birthright today? In other words, what's the most important, what's the valuable thing, the best thing in your lives now? So what we're going to do is we're going to take that from olden days. We know what a birthright is. Mm-hmm. Don't want to lose that. That's pretty good stuff. Mm-hmm. What have you got? What's your birthright?
The best thing that our parents have given us. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're saying?
Could be your wife, could be your kids, could be your job.
Yeah, I was going to say wife and kids, that would be my birthright.
Okay.
The thing that's most precious to my life at this point in time.
Okay.
You wouldn't trade it for a bowl of soup?
Well, I hope not.
Okay.
So you had a good minestrone, you'd come close, wouldn't you?
Make up your options.
Well,
that's good.
Wife
and kids when you're dead, eh? Yes,
that's right.
So that's the logic in the book.
Yeah. Okay, more birthrights. We've got to get a grip on our birthright. What's our birthright? Forget the name birthright. That's the name that we're using, birthright. That's the biblical word, birthright. What's your birthright?
Blessing from God.
Mm-hmm. Lord. I wouldn't train mine. My birth was planned by God. I wouldn't want to alter it in any way. So it is what it is.
You got some kids? They're pretty important to you now, aren't they? Okay. That's where I'm going, you know, like the things. Joel, does something really valuable in your life?
Not yet.
Okay.
But it's getting there.
Fine. Bill?
Yes. Outside of God, my wife, and then my three sons.
Okay. And I mean, it's not just your family, but it is your family. But it's not just that. It can be your job. It can be your status in where you do work. It could be your status in. You might be president of the football club.
If I can help you there, Daryl, it was only probably 5 years ago though that my birthright would have been the farm.
Yep.
But I've already made that transition, and so it's no longer the most valuable thing in my life.
Yep.
I had a situation where where I did make a decision which ended up with severe repercussions upon me because I was not prepared to sacrifice my farm for the sake of the risk of another issue.
Yeah.
And so that was my birthright at that time.
All right, well, even if we don't talk about it, just think in your own head. Think about what your birthright is. Not what the biblical is. Yes. I want you to translate it from the biblical birthright into you and your life. Okay? So even if you're not, then I want to share what that is just at the moment. Just get it in your head about what the birthright is. Okay, so just moving on from there, is the next step is... Okay, so just recap. All right, Jacob replied, but trade me your rights as the firstborn son. So Jacob, as the younger brother, says he's got something that I want, pretty valuable. I'm a bit of a heel grabber from way back. This might just be my chance to do a bit of wheeling dealing. What's he preying on? Look, I'm dying of starvation, said Esau. What good is my birthright to me now? I'm dying of starvation. Okay. Was he really going to die?
That sex thing that we were talking about this morning.
Yeah. Although, if you don't go without food for a long time, you will die.
Yeah.
But as opposed to sex.
Esau was quiet at that point.
Yeah.
I reckon.
He probably wasn't, but he's come running in. I'm dying. What good is my birthright to me now? Okay, so we're going to jump in. We're pretty smart fellas. So we're from year 2012. I'm just going to jump back in now and say, whoa! Esau, hold on. Let me just have a little chat with you. Don't worry about these clothes. We wear them where I come from. Okay. Let me just talk to you about your future and what's going on here. And Esau will look at me and say, yeah, well, what are you talking about? Hurry up, I'm starving. You know, I'm dying of starvation. Well, Esau, let me tell you this. Down the track from now, you're going to get married and you're going to have 12 sons, and those 12 sons are going to be the 12 tribes of Israel. And in this book, like, don't worry about what a book is, it's called a book. In this book, it'll talk about Abraham, Isaac and Esau, and that'll be on everybody's lips as the family, the forefathers of all of Christianity and all the Jews anyway. Abraham, Isaac, Esau. You don't want to miss that. And then when we get in this book called Matthew, there's this bloke, the Son of God's going to come down, he's going to provide salvation. And this bloke called Matthew is going to write all about it. And in the first chapter, he's going to talk about the genealogy going right through to Jesus. And it's going to be Abraham begot Isaac, begot Esau. You don't want to miss it. You don't want to miss it. So, I've been able to do that, but maybe there's not going to be somebody who's going to be able to do that to you when you are faced with a beautiful bowl of stew.
There's your
bowl of
stew. Yeah, pretty good. I'll fight you for it.
No.
You may lose.
Now, who would trade their birthright? We've already said it's important.
Yes.
For a bowl of stew.
No, not me.
I think
we do it all the time.
The comparison.
We do it all the time. Yep.
I think the comparison is, if we say our birthright is currently our biggest asset, right? Like, say it's my wife, or if it wasn't, it was my car, or it's my house, whatever it costs me. I have it at the moment. Like, if I lost my wife right now, that would have an immediate impact. But I think the decision was trading in an immediate good against a future benefit. The immediate is the need for food. Whereas, let's say we all had shares. We all had shares in Apple or Facebook or Microsoft or IBM or whatever it is. But we can't trade these shares in for 20 years. So we're saying, what's good is shares that I don't get to touch for 20 years versus me getting food now. Or what's good me, you know, inheriting when my parents die, like the guy that, you know, father, give me my birthright, give me my share of the inheritance now. I want to go off and have a good time. Give me the bowl of soup now. What's good is something I get in 20 years. Yeah. So it's about having that future perspective.
That's
where I say.
That's exactly right.
Because
that is
at the
exactly
moment, you're
right.
saying, who would trade, let's say the wife is worth 1,000 meals to me. What's worth trading 1,000 meals for one meal?
And how did I start the session? What was I talking about?
Yeah.
No. Before that, you don't know what God has got planned for you in the future.
Yeah.
And you don't want to miss it. That's how I started off, remember? Okay, so let me just cover a couple of things and we'll talk about this, about what goes on with your appetite. Now, when he gets to a point like that, or when you really get close to making that decision, your brain does a couple of things. And the first thing is you get what's called impact bias. And this takes a simple appetite and magnifies it out of all proportion. Okay, so ECR comes in, the brain's kicking in here, comes in, he's hungry. Okay, that's fine. But he has blown it all out of proportion. He's not hungry, he's dying of starvation. Okay, so another thing that it does it tells your brain that this thing, experience, or person is going to be extraordinarily satisfying. Now, that might not, don't think about it whilst you're there so much, but think about other times that you've gone and done stuff, okay, where an appetite comes on, and it could be for food, it could be for anything, it could be for alcohol, or porn, or a movie, anything like that. It just tells you that this is going to be really great. It's going to be so good. Think about shopping, okay, because your brain lies to you and it tells you that it will feel like an 8, but in fact it's a 3. And this part here of your brain ultimately can lead in what they call buyer's remorse. And you've heard about buyer's remorse.
Yeah.
So maybe you were shopping perhaps, and I'll just use this as an example, you're shopping, and you've got an appetite for something that you see or whatever, and you say, oh, this would be just so fantastic, I've got to have it. Think of your wives anyway, if it's not you. I've got to have this. It's just going to be so good. It's just going to go so great there. Maybe it's a TV. It's just going to be so good. And then when you get it home, and you unpack it, and it's just not right. So you've been let down, and you've got that buyer's remorse. It can be other things. Have anybody seen the movie War Horse?
No.
Okay, in the first part of War Horse, it's a new movie that's out, there's this guy, a farmer, it's before the First World War, and the farmer goes off to buy a farm horse. Anyway, there's a thoroughbred prancing around. Anyway, he decides he's going to buy it for the farm. My mates say, no, that's not what you need a draft horse. Anyway, so he'd got no money. Little bit of money, but poor as. Anyway, so he bids, and then on the other side is his landlord.
Mm.
And the landlord bids and ups him and all that sort of stuff. It goes up in guineas. Anyway, ultimately, backwards and forwards, and he wins. And he buys this horse for 30 guineas. And as he's walking home, it's like, what have I done? How am I going to pay for this? And his mates were saying the same thing. What have you done? How are you going to pay for this? And he's walking home with the horse over his shoulder, and he's sort of like going home to face his wife with like this, you know. And he's obviously got that buyer's remorse. At the time, he wanted that horse. All these sort of things came over. The whole thing was blown out of proportion in his head. It lied to him and said, this horse is just going to be so fantastic for you. And he gets it home, and it's the wrong horse, really. But that's the base of the story. But I think that we've probably all done that, haven't we? We've gone and bought something that was going to be you, Ute.
Always have a list before you go to Bunnings.
And it just wasn't. It just didn't happen.
And it stops being about the horse, it was the competition to win the auction.
Yeah.
Because auctions, sometimes you, like eBay does that, suddenly you have to win and you forget what your limit was, or a house auction, you know.
That's exactly
it's
right.
It's competitive, I've got to beat the other guy.
And then later on, you've got that remorse. And another thing that happens is what's called focalism, where your mind focuses on one thing and blurs everything else out. And that's really what happened there too. You know, and maybe. Yeah, thinking about your drugs and your alcohol, nothing else matters. I know my son's a drug addict. If he wants drugs or whatever, you can talk to him to the moon until the cows come out. Don't matter. Focus, drugs. Or alcohol, or video games. Come and have some dinner. Bugger off. I want you to go down the street and do some messages for me. Bugger off. Playing computer games. Got the picture there? We've all been there.
If you ever want to see how your mind focuses, be driving to work late, and you'll see every clock to give an owner's there.
Yeah, there you go. That's right. Your brain can put everything else around you out of focus, and focusing you on one thing or person, and that can be good or bad. Now, a lot of sports people, what's their coach saying? Now, focus. Focus. So, like I said before, it can be good or bad. If you need to focus, you know, like I'd like you to focus on this session. But if the focus is on the wrong thing, there you go. Your brain changes when appetite is inflamed. So what we've got here, we've got the suit down there that looks pretty young though. We've got Esau, his brain, telling him that, he's not just hungry. He is dying of starvation. So we've got a few things going on in his brain there. So he's not getting the right message. He's not focused. He's going to have buyer's remorse. I can see that coming. And that's what's going on in his brain. Okay, so let's just think now. Now we talked about a few things. What I want you to think about is, what is your bowl of stew? Now we said before, I wouldn't trade my birthright for a bowl of stew. So we're putting names on things. We've already put some names on our birthright. If you don't want to speak them out, that's okay, but I want you to start putting names on your bowl of stew. We've got a couple of people jump up and talk about it in just over the last couple of days, and they talked about their bowl of stew. Nobody stood up and said, "Oh, I traded my birthright for a bowl of stew." They didn't say that, but they said other words. You watched that movie last night, Courageous? Okay, think about near the end. Okay, what happened with that policeman? Well, tell me what happened. Put it in our words here.
Birthright.
Okay, what was his birthright?
His job, his family.
And there was a boy? Yeah, a son.
His reputation.
Reputation?
Commitment to God.
He was a Christian, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Made a commitment to his mates?
A Christian.
So he had already made that resolution, made that commitment. Okay, so there's our birthright.
Yeah, and okay. It's real. I mean, Christians get called out as well as anyone else.
Okay.
Are you saying we're human?
Most of us are.
Okay, so Bevan, what was his bowl of stew?
Oh, so it's drugs, the money. I guess it was the money. The drugs was only the means to the money.
Right. He wasn't a drug taker, I think. But he was skimming.
He wanted a bit of extra money.
Yeah.
For the thing that he felt he needed.
Mm. He justified himself and said, "I'm looking after the family."
But he had things going on in his brain that were, Well, basically, his appetite was controlling him. For that month, the appetite was for the money, or a bit more comfort. You know, I can't survive. I can't look after my family on 36 grand a year. You know, and this extra 12 grand a year that he's going to get from that is going to make all the difference. So his appetite was for the money for some purpose. And we said before, who would trade their birthright for a bowl of stew? It happens all the time. All the time. Some people haven't done it yet. Some people have got that little bowl of stew, or their appetite. As I said before, stuff's going on here, it's not coming out. But there is stuff hidden away that you might do in secret, or that you haven't got caught yet, or you wouldn't really, maybe it's not that bad, but you just wouldn't like everybody to know about it. Maybe not, but that might be happening in people that you know. And it's just waiting to bust forth.
I could share something. God's put on my heart a desire to tell people about Christ. But often I'll substitute an opportunity for keeping the peace. So I won't tell someone about Jesus, because it's easier just to stay quiet and to stay in your comfort zone, you make the compromise. I think that's one of the ways in which I settle for the bowl of stew. You know, it's easier. You're not going to get into people going to they're not going to think you're a weird backing Christian. And so I guess that's one of the struggles I have as a Christian.
Sure.
But recently I had a great opportunity to explain the gospel when I did step out of my comfort zone and I was just really straight with this guy. I stacked shelves in Coles at night, and I was with this guy, and usually we were on our own, just stacking the shelf for like 4 hours in the night. But this time, I was with this guy. I've got to know a little bit with the guy, and just had a great opportunity to challenge him about Christ. And it's backing and toing and froing, and I was able to just say to him a simple message of Christ, was crucified for us. So I think, it showed me that, to take that step, really, of faith and to speak out.
Thanks, Sam. Well, we've only got 5 minutes to go, so just to start winding it up, as Joel mentioned earlier, we've got to look at this in light of our future. So over the next day or so, or when you go home, maybe get a piece of paper and say, write down some things like, in 5 years' time or in 10 years' time, I would like, or something like that, yeah? Because you've really got to, you've got to think about this in light of your future. Because how are we going to deal with it is we need to, next one up, reframe. And we need to look at the bowl of stew, and if whenever things might be there in the future, and I've done this myself, think about the bowl of stew. Think about this lesson, and hopefully you might be able to use this somewhere, or you'll recognise somebody will say something and say, "That's a bowl of stew. That's a bowl of stew," and you'll come back to this. But you need to look at the bowl of stew and say, in light of my future, this is Esau now. In light of my future, is it really worth trading for this? Is it worth trading the ultimate, which can be what God's got planned for you, or with your family, with your kids, grandkids, for the immediate? So it's there or there. That's the question we need to... So we've got to reframe what's going on. Okay, I'm dying of starvation. Okay, let's just reframe that. Think about the ultimate against the immediate, and think, in view of my future, as the leader of Israel, as the, all the other things we said, the tribes and all that sort of stuff, and the family, etc., the blessing of God, is it worth trading all of that for this? So you need to measure your future against the bowl of stew. And where is that number? One on the back here somewhere. Lost it. There it is. And then make the decision, I am not prepared to trade my future, birthright, and all that God has in store for me for that bowl of stew. So we've got to reframe our thinking and say, all right, it's not just about now, it's not just about the immediate, but it's the ultimate. It's the ultimate thing that God might have in store for me in the future, through me, through my family, through my kids, all that sort of stuff. Do I want to trade that for the immediate, which is the bowl of stew? And just to wrap it up, just finish off from there, Esau said, what good is my birthright to me now? But Jacob said, first you must swear that your birthright is mine. So Esau swore an oath, thereby selling all his rights as the firstborn to his brother Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and stew. Esau ate the meal, then got up and left. He showed contempt for his rights as the firstborn. So that's the passage there.
Could I just comment further and say, for the firstborn in those days, the firstborn was always the Lord's, same as the first fruits were. So he was selling his rights as the firstborn who belonged to God.
Mm. And that's where the blessing came from.
So he's rejecting God's purpose for him, yeah, basically.
Mm-hmm.
God.
Yeah, and later on that reads up in Hebrews as well. If you read, you can follow the story of Esau through a few places in the Bible.
Yeah.
All right. So really, what I want you to take away from this is to think about some of the stories that some of the blokes have shared down there. Think of other people that we've seen in the media. Think about your mates or us here, and then try and think about your own appetite, and you've got them. And the key thing is to make sure that you're managing your appetite and that it's not managing you. And you will be able to do that a bit by, if you can, think back about this session, think about the bowl of stew. Because, you know, it's not so much that we're talking about today. This could be in a year's time from now, where there's a bowl of stew in front of you. Now, that could be someone on the internet. That could be someone at work that you're having a little flirt with. That could be something that you do. You get tempted one day in your life. You see something and you're in a shop. And you say, and we had this again. Nobody's looking. Just take that. I need one of those. And you shoplift or something like that. And you get caught. Okay.
Even if you don't get caught.
Or even if you don't get caught. Okay, but still, but if you do get caught, if you do get caught, then the police are involved. And you might be a leader, you might be the boss of your work, you might be somewhere, but in a small town, it'll be in the paper. And stuff happens.
Mm.
So if you're tempted to pick up that thing, or to flirt with that girl at work, or to get onto the internet, or to do something with your friends through Facebook, a bit of secret stuff that your wife doesn't know about, think of the bowl of stew. Place, that's the end. I want to thank you for getting involved and helping me out with this and sharing some of your stuff. And I hope you can take something away from it. So thank you very much.
Thank you.